Have you ever wondered, am I more than my mental health diagnosis? Am I meant for more than being a mom? Do you desire a space to talk about that messy middle and the dreams for your future? A space where it's okay to fill up your cup first, where talking about anxiety and depression is just as natural as talking about the weather. If any of this resonates with you, I invite you here to the Chasing Courage community, a podcast that originally started in 2020 in the midst of the pandemic to help me navigate my own anxiety and depression, as well as my personal growth journey. I'm Courtney. I'm a wife, a mom to one with one on the way, and I've got big goals and aspirations. Goals that motherhood or mental illness are not going to be my excuse, but rather the reason that I am able to achieve all of these things on my heart. If you're ready to do the same, let's go chase courage together. Hello, and welcome back to the podcast. I am so excited that you are here today, and I have an amazing guest to share with you. My friend Megan is here with us. Megan, thank you so much for coming on to Chasing Courage.
Oh, thank you so much, Courtney. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh my gosh. So we had a conversation in April of last year, which when I like went to look back, I was like, I didn't realize that that was 10 months ago.
That's insane.
When you were on the other podcast. But so for any of you who are listening, whether you have or have not ever checked out Confetti Worthy Women, Megan is episode 16 on that one. And we had a conversation a lot about journaling and your book that you have on journaling in that one. Well, what I want to talk with you about today is you literally super recently in real time have moved jobs, have moved states. And I just think anytime that we change things like that in our adult lives, it's a big deal. And so I just want to kind of talk through what that looks like.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it. I mean, it is still very, very new, very recent, and I'm still kind of like processing through all the things. So I'm excited.
Oh my gosh, yes. Okay, so for those who may or may not be familiar with you, just give like a slight background about who Megan is and what she does.
Yeah, so my name is Megan. I am a writer, a podcaster, and I always used to say professor, but I am now a high school English teacher at a public charter school in Arkansas. And so I love writing, I love reading, I love women's empowerment, and I also really do love teaching. And so I don't know. I always struggle with this question. Like, what else should I say?
I know. I know.
I was born and raised in the Midwest. And actually, before we pushed record on this episode, Courtney and I were just talking about like how the weather's different down here in the South than it is in the Midwest and stuff. So that's an adjustment. But yeah, that's who I am.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So let's paint the picture for the listener a little bit about, you mentioned you were a professor. What that looked like, how long you did that, and then kind of where and how the feelings started coming up of you thinking that you wanted to do something else.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I have been a professor for like 10 years, and it's really strange because I started grad school immediately after college. So I graduated college in 2012, and I immediately went into a master's program, and that was from 2012 to 2014. And during the master's program, that was the first time I was in the classroom teaching. So I have a bachelor's in English, no teaching endorsement, no other major, no other minor, no other emphasis, just in English. And so when I went into the master's program, one of the things that happens when you're in grad school is you get teaching assistantships, right? And they're not guaranteed. Like you do, it's going to be like that application process is different for each school or whatever. But for my master's program, you just kind of had to check a box if you were interested in teaching, and you just kind of had to list any sort of requirements that could make you, you know, good for the classroom, right? So I did, and I got one of those. And so that was the first time I had taught in my life, like 22 years old, straight out of undergrad, like, I don't know what I'm doing. But this program was so structured so well that it made you confident and felt supported, right? But I loved teaching. I absolutely loved teaching. And I loved how like the college classroom had a sense of like freedom, you know, you could swear, you could do, you know, you could just kind of I don't know. I don't know how else to like explain it, but there was just like this free flowiness, this freedom. You know, if you were sick, there was no one to answer to. You could just email your class and cancel for the day, you know, type of stuff. There was a lot of freedom, a lot of privilege that came with being a college professor. And that trend continued from my master's into my PhD program. So that program took me about 5 years. You had 7 years total to complete it. And you were not allowed to teach the first 2 years. And in those first 2 years of my program, I missed teaching. I missed it a lot. I was like, oh, like I would love to get back into the classroom. Like I really missed this, but I knew that year three, I could apply to do it. And that was a much more intensive process. You needed all of the documents, the materials, like you needed a letter of interest for the position. You needed a teaching philosophy. You needed like sample syllabi, like this whole big thing, because to be a professor outside of grad school, you need tons of documents, sometimes even more than that. Wow. Diversity statements, success statements, administrative statements in case like you want to be an admin, like just a whole big folder of stuff, right? So we were getting practice for that. So I applied for that job in grad school in my PhD program and I got it. And again, I loved teaching. It was fantastic. And then my husband, Roger, well, he wasn't my husband at the time, but my fiance, Roger, at the time, he finished his PhD program a year before I did. And so our funding for teaching had run out at IUP. So he got a job as a tenure track faculty at a small college in Iowa. And so because our funding ran out, we were both just kind of like, well, let's just move back there, right? We'll move back there together. And then opportunity of a lifetime came up that they had a job for me. So I was ABD at the time, which means all but dissertation. So I had done all the other requirements necessary to get the PhD. And so I just needed to write my dissertation, which is a big academic book. So I was working on that while teaching, while planning a wedding, while really getting into a particular kind of fitness. I was very into HIIT workouts and very into shredding for the wedding type of thing. You know, I mean, I think a lot of us do that, right? So I was very into that. So I had a very, very full plate. And I was excited to teach, right? To teach like, quote unquote, in the real world, not as in a position of a student, but as an actual professor, as an actual ABD professor. And that was the first time I didn't like it. That was the first time I was like, oh, like I'm not enjoying this, right? But of course I shove it all down because what the heck did I just spend the last however many years doing, right? Because I know this is such a long story, but I promise I will get there eventually.
Oh my gosh, it's fine.
But it was the first time that I was like, man, this just doesn't feel good, but squish it down, right? And I was so confused by that because I had never thought of doing something else. And then when you take the route that I did, when you're an English major in college, you have a couple of options, right? You have the BA high school teacher option where you have two majors, the education and the English, or you go to law school or you go to grad school. And I was on the grad school track, which puts you into the career of a professor. So I inadvertently kind of chose to be a professor before I fully knew like what that meant, if that makes any sense. Yeah. And so because I couldn't imagine not studying English, like, and so that was the reason that I kept going. It wasn't to pursue teaching. It was to pursue the study of English, right? And then which I knew, and then the professor kind of came with it, right? But I ended up loving it until I didn't, right? And so that was the start. 2018 into 2019 was the start of me being really unhappy in the classroom. And I didn't realize this at the time. I thought it was teaching that I didn't like, that I had somehow fallen out of love with teaching. But really what it was bad environment after bad environment, the wrong demographic after the wrong demographic to teach. And so I had gone through like this period of feeling like very lost, very confused, because in 2019, I had graduated with my PhD. So I wasn't a student anymore. And all I had was teaching and teaching in a place that wasn't fulfilling. And I just felt like a giant pile of crap and was so confused, very lost. And I, you know, tried to find myself after that and whatnot. So that was a super, super long story. So I had taught at the same, like the place I was at before the school that I'm at now, that was kind of the last straw. I was like, I'm not willing to try another university. Yes, I only tried two, but I'm kind of done. Like I'm done with the higher education system for now. Yeah. Because I'm just not fulfilled. I don't feel good about it. So I was actively trying to get out, right? And so I was just applying to any and all jobs that I could find on LinkedIn, you know, and I applied to a job in Arkansas. And honestly, like, this is really funny. I do not remember applying for that job. when they called me and asked me for an interview, I was like, oh, cool. Yeah, sure. Like, I'll do it. But yeah, I had applied to over like 200 jobs in very different. Gosh. Yeah. That's how bad, Courtney, I wanted to get out. That's how poorly misaligned my circumstances were. And I just couldn't do it anymore. I had started to do lots of stuff on the side, like building a business, writing books, doing all that stuff on the side. And the side hustle stuff was so fulfilling until the job became so toxic that it just overshadowed all the other stuff.
And you couldn't enjoy anything.
I couldn't enjoy anything. Like, it just was it was just so bad. And so I applied to like 200 jobs and in a bunch of different industries. Like, I had applied for writing jobs, I'd applied for publishing jobs. And then I just started to apply to like teaching jobs because, again, this little voice popped up that was like, maybe you don't hate teaching. Maybe it's in bad environment after bad environment. So I, you know, applied to the job, went, loved it. I got into the car. I mean, it was a full day of teaching and I got into the car afterward and I looked at Roger and I was like, holy shit, holy shit. I feel so energized. I feel so excited. Like, that is why I love teaching.
Oh, okay. So
that was so much. I'm so sorry.
No, it's so much, but it's so good. So when you had, how does that work, right? When you're in a different state, first of all, and then they want to interview you for this position in the other state, like, so you traveled there?
Yeah. So, so with the first interview, so it was amazing. Like, this high school moved 10 times faster than universities move. So with the university, you submit your, you know, stack of paperwork, right? And then they take weeks to get back to you, right? And 9 times out of 10, they don't move forward with the process, right? And so there's the initial, there might be like a couple initial interviews or whatever with panels and stuff like that. And then they bring you to campus and then you do like a full day and then there's more interviews and stuff like that with this high school. So I had applied, they called me and emailed me, you know, like a week after I had, maybe not even a week after I had applied to it. And they were like, hey, we're going to do, like, we'd love to invite you for an interview. However, we see where you're located in Iowa and we're in Arkansas for this initial interview. We are willing to do it over Google, like Google Meets or whatever. Yeah. So that's what I did. So for the first interview, I did it over Google Meets. And then at the end of the interview, you could just kind of tell they were interested. I felt like I did a horrible job. I felt like I did a horrible job. Because up to that point, I hadn't been interviewing for teacher positions. I had been interviewing for writers. And I had nailed all the different writing, editing stuff. Because in like prior to then, so that was November. In like July earlier that year in 2022. So yeah, so in July of 2022, I had actually been offered a position as like a curriculum editor at a different university, but it just wasn't a good fit. Yeah. So then this was the following, you know, fall in November 2022. And so, yeah, so they just were like, at the end of the interview, they were like, oh my gosh, you know, this seems like something that would be really good for you, also really good for us. They're like, we really, really want you to come here. We want you to come here. We need you to teach a full day to get the full experience, to see how it is, to see if it's a good fit for you and for us. But like, we are something special and we really need you to come like feel it, to see it, right?
Oh my God.
And I was like, cool. And so they paid for a hotel, you know, and yeah.
And so how, Roger went with you,
your
husband, and you just stayed one night there and then talked?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we drove down so from where I used to live in Iowa, Arkansas was only like 4 or 5 hours away.
That's not bad.
No, it wasn't bad at all. So like, I used to live at the base, it was the last town in Iowa before the Missouri border, you know, so at the very, very bottom of Iowa. So it was like 4 or 5 hours. We drove down on a Sunday. We, you know, had dinner, went to bed. I got up at 5 the next day, got ready, pristinely curled my hair because it had to be perfect. And, you know, was at the school at 7:30, teaching by like 8:05.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So Okay, two questions. The first is, what was your conversation with your husband like when you initially started applying for all of these things, as far as specific to the location, right? I mean, this isn't just you're a single woman who's going to move potentially. This, like, I remember when I decided I was going to work outside of the school or the city I went to school in, I was like, I'm a 22, 23 year old single girl. I'm going to apply to wherever, and wherever I land up.
Yeah.
Or land. But you obviously have like a husband and a dog. And it's like, was there any like cities or states that were like off limits, or like, what did that conversation look
like?
Yeah.
I love that. Nothing was off limits. Oh. Absolutely nothing was off limits. And I think, so I don't have any fear about move, like picking up my life and moving, right? Yeah. Like that was never an issue for me, because like, I mean, I was very, very close to my family, still very, very close, but then going away for college only 2 hours away, like helped. Right. But then when I got into my PhD program, I moved like 20 plus hours across the country. Right. Because the thing about it is like, you don't get to like pick and choose. Like you apply to schools, you get options. If you're lucky, you get into more than one. Very rare.
Yeah,
but you go where you get into school, right?
Where you're accepted,
the exact same thing applies to jobs. The advice you're given in grad school is it doesn't matter where it's located. If you get offered the job, you go, because jobs are that rare and that difficult to get that you go, right? You go. It doesn't matter where you go. You're just going to go. So I had that mentality, that sort of like belief, but I'm also just, I like experiencing different places, right? Different places, different vibes. Like I used to live in, so I grew up in a very, very small town, right? In Minnesota. And then I went to school in Grand Forks, North Dakota, which is like 50, 60,000 people, I think. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
But it was big. So there was enough stuff, but it wasn't like, you know, super hustle, bustle, big city like, right?
You,
so it was,
New York.
Yeah, exactly. So it was like, it was big, but it wasn't like, you know, crazy. And then we'd moved to Indiana, Pennsylvania, which is like an hour outside of Pittsburgh. And so we were still, again, in like a smaller town, close to a city, but a smaller town. And then we had moved to a small town in Iowa for the first college that we had worked at. And that was really, really small, way too small and isolated. And I think that's part of the reason why we hated it.
Yeah.
And then we had moved to another small, small town, even smaller than the small town I grew up in. And, but it was close to things. Like it was an hour away from Des Moines. So like we were constantly like driving, and it felt okay. Like it was manageable, but no jobs or places were off limits for us really. We were just trying to cast, our philosophy was to cast a wide enough net for options, because when you are that desperate to get out of your situation, you need options.
Yes.
You know, and we were excited and willing to try new places. And Roger was also not happy in the position either. So it was kind of like, you know, it was a team effort of like, hey, you apply, I'll apply. We'll see what happens. And whoever gets the best offer, like, let's go type of deal.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So you get this offer, and then what does that look like on his end? Then is he like, okay, well, I'm now just looking for jobs in this city or surrounding cities?
Yeah. So that was, oh my gosh, that was, I think, the most difficult piece. So after I had done the full day of teaching, the woman who was in charge of the search committee, her name was Kate. She was like, okay, we're going to like confer over here. Like you need to go like go chill for an hour, like decompress. And then here's my address. Come to my house. Like we can just like debrief. You can ask me all of the questions, you know, we can talk about stuff, whatever. So I was actually offered the job like at her house, which is completely unheard of. Yeah. That same day,
which is
completely unheard of for me. Like, I don't know if that's how it works in the real world, but like for me with academia, that's not how it works. There's so much waiting in between. Right. So she offered me the job. We had put in already, like got the ball rolling, put in like a counter offer to the salary or whatever and whatnot. And I asked her a bunch of questions. And I just said, I am worried. I said about cost of living. Like, I was like, you need to understand that I come from a place where you can rent, a two bedroom house with a garage, like 900 square feet for like $550. Like, I was like, I am terrified of the rent where, you know, like where I am now,
right,
in Arkansas, right? Because it's double that, right?
Wow, yeah.
You know, for an apartment or a house. And I was like, I'm very concerned, especially since my husband doesn't have a job. And Roger and I have never, ever, ever moved without the security of the other person having a job, right? We said no a couple years ago to a job Roger got in the Boston area because there wasn't anything for me and we just could not financially swing it, right?
Yeah.
So I was very concerned, very worried and whatnot. But the area that I'm in Northwest Arkansas, like it's very booming with job opportunities and stuff like that. So there's tons of options for Roger and stuff to find something. But I did voice that concern to her. And so she was like, yeah, no, there's tons of job stuff. And, you know, she knows people here and there. She's like, I could put in a good word or whatever. So
yeah.
When the job actually came in, the official offer for me after I had gone home, it was like the Tuesday or Wednesday before Thanksgiving. There was a different job that Roger could have applied to in the same school system that I'm in, but at a different location.
Okay.
And so, you know, Roger was going to do that, but then it was just kind of like missing ships where they already filled the position and like he just missed it. I had told Kate this on the phone. And so she's like, yeah, we want to officially offer you the job. Like, has your husband heard about the other job? And I said, yeah, they filled it. And she was like, her reaction, it was a pause and then crap and then silence.
Like she was like, we might lose you.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I had Keisha Get Mary talks about this feeling of like the pot, like boiling, like that type of reaction. And I was having one of those reactions and I found myself without talking to Roger, which I do not condone doing this, but without talking to Roger, like this bubbling was happening. And I was like, you know what? I was like, it's okay. I was like, he will find something. We will figure it out. I was like, this opportunity is way too aligned and amazing for me to say no. So she's like, you're saying yes? I was like, I am saying yes. And she's like, oh, I'm so happy. So we moved for the first time having him having a job. It was crazy. But then after that, it kind of set in what I had done. and I was like, oh my God. So we had this plan to talk to the administration at my old university, and Roger actually is keeping his job through August. So it gives us a little bit of grace and time to figure it out. So we are so grateful that it all worked out. And I'm just choosing to place faith and trust in the universe that this is a gift. Yeah. You know, the fact that they're letting him stay on through August to do his full job and to get paid and so that we can make it work.
Is he traveling or is he doing remote work?
He's doing it all remote. He teaches like 5 classes or something like that on Zoom. And then he's also the tutoring director and writing center director. So he's doing all of that stuff remotely.
Oh
yeah. With Banner as his teaching assistant.
Oh my gosh. And do you I know so much of teaching has shifted over the last couple of years, but do you think that either one of you would be in this position that you were had 2020 or the pandemic not happened how it did?
Ooh, that's a really, really good question. I think so. Okay. So when we went from Pennsylvania to the first school in Iowa, we wanted to stay. We were like, yes, this, you know, Roger got the tenure track job. When you get the tenure track job, you are not ever, ever supposed to leave.
Yeah.
Like the thing that will, you know, make you leave is passing away. Like literally, like when you get those jobs, you're supposed to, quote unquote, you're supposed to keep it and hang on to it forever. Right. But it just was not aligned. The culture of the place, the city itself, we hated it. We were so miserable. And so we released it. We let go. Roger let go of tenure. We went to a different small school in Iowa so that he could be the writing center director because he's very, very passionate about that. You know, and then I was an adjunct and that was miserable. And that's a whole other story. But then a assistant visiting professor job opened up for me that I applied for, that I worked for. And technically we had the dream, right? Like we had the dream of, you know, two professors at the same school getting paid fine for the place, right? Like we had the dream, but it just didn't feel good. It just didn't feel right. Like it, what, like we still had one foot out the door.
Yeah.
You know, every single place and even all the different jobs Roger's applied to in the last 3.5 years, whenever we look at the locations and the school, we're always like, okay, well, we could stay here for this amount of years. Like we already have an exit plan before we get there, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we had always planned on exiting. So I don't know if the pandemic would have, if it wouldn't have happened, if it would have changed anything. We always had that mentality of like, we're still hunting for our ideal scenario, I guess. And I feel like now we finally have it, right? Where we're in a bigger city, there's stuff to do. I don't have to drive an hour to the dentist. I can drive around the corner, you know? And there's stuff to do. And it just, I actually like what I'm doing on a daily basis. So I don't know if the pandemic would have affected things. I just read a lot during the pandemic. I didn't do very much. I read a ton of books.
Yeah. I think, it's funny. I just had a flashback of one time. I remember we were getting on a call together. Mm-hmm. This is when you lived in Iowa. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm going to run out and get something to eat. And then I'll be on as soon as I get back. And you're like, I can't do that where I live. Like there's no quick running to like a store, unless I'm going to go get pizza at the gas station. Like,
yep. Yeah. Seriously.
And, you know, everybody's different, right? Like there's mm-hmm. some people where they live for that. They're like, I don't want to be, you know, near mm-hmm. society or culture or whatever.
Yeah.
And other people are like, if there's not like a McDonald's and Wendy's within a 10-minute drive, like I don't want to live there.
Yeah. I mean, that's where I grew up. I mean, I grew up in the country of Minnesota, like Minnesota Lake Country, where you did have to drive 20 minutes for a McDonald's. And that was fine growing up. I loved it. It was great for then, but now I'm different and we have different, you know, values and like you live life. And I like to be closer to things. I mean, granted, since arriving here, we haven't done a lot. We've done a lot of DoorDash because that was not a thing the last 3.5 years where we lived in Iowa. So that is fantastic.
You didn't even have it, right?
No, you didn't have, there was no DoorDash. There was no Uber. There was no Uber Eats. There was no Walmart. Like I was in the middle of nowhere and we could handle it, but I just wanted more.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's just like, I mean, so many of the women who listen to this podcast, your podcast, it's just I love the just normalizing of like women who want more or like things are good, but we want great. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I just like eat that up. And it's so disheartening. Like sometimes I almost forget, like when I talk to certain family members or something, the how normal it is for people to feel like they need to just be content with good.
Oh yeah. 100%.
Or like with you and Roger, how you were like, we had the perfect scenario. And so like, it's literally, I almost feel like I'm living in a separate world sometimes. I don't know if you feel like mm-hmm. this, but you're like, no, you don't understand. Like you can try other things. You can like go do other things. Like I have a family member who works a job and literally I'm listening to her complain about it for like a year. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, go get another job. Like,
yeah. 100%. Well, and I was doing my best not to be that person who just like bitches about their job every day, but that's who I was. And I did a podcast episode on this, but our environment is so crucial, right? Like I mean, Lori Harder had said it too at Empower Her Live in 2022, but the like your environment is your willpower. And I think you and I, and probably a ton of the women listening in, are ambitious, do want more, and will fight tooth and nail against the shitty environment that you're in, right? But that is exhausting. And that's where I found myself at, where I'm like, I'm building all this stuff like in whatnot. And it's just like, there's just so many environmental factors that just felt like the little like sea urchins in Ursula's cave in The Little Mermaid. They're just like trying to like pull you down. And that's exhausting. I think it's brave to be contrary to your environment. But after a while, like it's just not conducive to growth or to more, and it's just not worth your time. So you have to just ask yourself, like, does it have to be this way? Do I have to be this exhausted on a daily basis because I'm fighting tooth and nail to be different?
Yeah.
And for me, it just wasn't worth that anymore. Hence applying to 200 jobs to get out.
Yeah. I think too, the other thing that I wanted to touch on that you mentioned was how like you had this moment where you were like, wait, maybe it's not teaching, maybe it is more so the environment, and I am mm-hmm. into teaching. And I remember when I had read U-Turn by Ashley Stahl earlier this year, she had talked to that point a little bit about how, like, she was using the example of a lawyer, somebody that she was working with. And she was like, maybe it isn't that you aren't supposed to be in law, but maybe you're supposed to do like family law versus like criminal justice. Like sometimes it's a little tweak, but I feel like when people think change, I don't know if you're like this, you automatically think it's like big change or nothing, like all or nothing. And sometimes actually maybe you just need to like go like 2 degrees to the right and then it'll be better.
No, absolutely. It's so wild when that happens. And I mean, I like, it's just, you don't know what you don't know, right? Or like, it's just sometimes when you're in it, it's just really, really freaking hard. And you just can't see it, right? And I think what I really, really needed was just a different environment, just a bit of a little pivot, just a little quarter pivot to a different, it was almost just like moving rooms. Like I was so committed to staying in the university room because of all the perks and stuff like that you get. Like, I mean, at the last university I was at, my summer started the May 1st, May 1st through the majority of August. Like it was a long summer, you know, and I'm so grateful for having all of that time. Right. And so that was one of the reasons, like, again, like I had said earlier, like there are no sick days, there's no vacation, like nobody's really watching you. And that probably sounds like I, you know, was doing whatever I wanted all the time. Like I wasn't, I promise, but it's just like, if you don't feel good, you don't have to power through, you can just cancel and it just is what it is. Right. And I loved all those perks of being a professor, right? Because it allows you a lot of freedom to do what you want, like in between and stuff like that. But I just wasn't, none of those trade-offs like were worth it. You know, I'm finishing reading right now, Judy Holler's book, right? I think it's like Fear is My Homeboy or something like that. Oh, she talks about that. She talks about trade-offs where it's like sometimes we stay stuck in a thing that isn't aligned and we know it's not aligned because we're like, oh, but it has this, but it has that. And it's like, but you're still miserable, right? So it's like you have to accept some of those trade-offs. So now some of the trade-offs are that I love what I do on a daily basis. My days go by so fast, but I do have to wake up every day at like 5 or 5:15. I do have to stay at the school in a physical place until 3:30. Like I don't have my phone. I can't do anything else during the day but teach. But it's like all of that is worth it. Like I would not go back to what I had before.
Yeah.
Because it was perfectly fine. Like it was fine. But it's not as good as this new environment. So there are those trade-offs.
Yeah. It makes me think of, you know, the whole concept of like what you look for, you will find.
Yes.
And like in any scenario, in any relationship, in any job, there are pros and cons.
Oh yeah.
It's 100%. Just what are you going to focus on?
Yes. What are you going to focus on? What feels right?
Yeah.
What are you willing to live with?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
that's a super good point too. Like, what are you willing to just be okay with? Are you the person that's okay with just getting by? Cool. But if you're the person who's ambitious and wants more and all that, then that's not going to work for you.
Yeah. And I just got to a point where the side hustle stuff just wasn't, like I said earlier, just wasn't enough. You know, writing my own books, doing everything I was doing on the side just wasn't enough anymore because I hated what I was doing on the daily.
And that's such a powerful message too. Like something that would typically bring you joy. And if it doesn't anymore, I mean, they say this so much with like mental health too. They're like, okay, your typical hobby that you would go to do, if that doesn't bring you joy anymore, like then you know something's wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's just like even the joy from doing all the stuff on the side, like wasn't enough to compensate for the dissatisfaction and the lack of joy in, you know, in the job. And now it's really interesting. I'm dealing with something I've never dealt with before where I'm very fulfilled with what I do on the daily. I don't feel like I'm wasting my time. Like it just feels really good. And I love who I work with. But now I'm feeling like a weird lack of motivation with what I used to do like on the side where it's like it, and I'm still trying to, I have no idea what it means, what to do with it. And I haven't talked about that a lot because it makes me feel like guilty where I'm like, why don't I want to work on my business? Why am I not compelled to edit this manuscript right now? Like, you know, like it's just, it's a weird difference, but I also, I sort of came to a partial conclusion the other day, which is that for years, like years and years and years, I have coped with my dissatisfaction in my job with hustling on the side, doing all these other things, right? And now that there's no dissatisfaction in what I do, what I get paid to do on the daily, now it's kind of like there's like that lack of motivation. So I was coping with being ambitious. Like ambition was a coping mechanism and it was the weirdest thing. And now I just have this, like my desire for 2023 was to slow down. I think this has been building for a very long time, to surrender to fun, to surrender to contentment, to not wait for the other shoe to drop and to still do the stuff on the side, but we're going slow. Like we are going so slow on the side. Like it just is what it is. So I can enjoy the contentment now that I get from my job.
Yeah. It's like, and whether it's an actual formal business or just a hobby or whatever, at the end of the day, it's yours, right? It's your side business. It's your side passion. It's your side thing. So you get to decide how invested you are in it or you aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's like a real blessing, in my opinion, that you are in that position. Like, you don't have to do the thing after work in order to make yourself want to wake up the next day and go to work.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. The amount of pizza I consume, the amount of junk food, the amount of mindless, numb scrolling for hours and hours that I did the last 3.5 years. Like it just, it also, it, like I haven't fully processed it or like thought about it, but like it's starting to like, you know, come up in this like healing process. Like there's a healing that's happening, you know? And I'm just like, man, being, you know, not always being in motion is okay. Like it's more than okay. But that's what I was doing the last couple of years to distract myself from how crappy everything was. Just always have to be in motion and eat all the food to feel okay. And I don't have to do that anymore. Oh my gosh, that's, you know,
the best. Yes. Oh my gosh. Okay. Before we sign off here, I think the perfect way to wrap this up would be to have you speak to the woman who, whether it be just she doesn't like the city that she lives in, or she doesn't like the job that she's in, or both, similar to your situation, what would you say to her if she's like, oh yeah, but like, okay, yeah, I know I can look for jobs, or I know we should look into moving, but like, just give her that little push.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So for years I have listened to Empower Her podcast, right? Keisha Get Mary's Empower Her podcast. And this is hopefully, well, that'd be probably good that she hears this, but I used to get so mad at her, like irritated at her when she would say, you can always change your mind. If you don't like your job, you can get a new one. If you don't like your city, you can get a new one. And I get so mad at her because I'm like, that's not the case for everybody. Like, you don't get it. Like, I was that person, right? Yes. But she's right. She's right. You can change your mind. You can change your city. You just have to allow yourself to entertain the possibility. Because I think the thing that made me so mad before, it was like, how? Like, I applied for other university positions and they didn't happen. Like, I don't know how to make this happen, right? We get wrapped up in that how.
Yes.
And I get it, because the how is important. But I think it's just, you have to like surrender to that desire. You have to surrender to that desire and just make it happen. Like, get as many options out there like as you can. Make your dream list of places to live, like apply to 500 jobs. Like, you have no idea. You have no idea what could happen when you let yourself believe that that could be possible. Because I know it. I was that person. You want to dig your heels in and grind your teeth and be like, you're wrong. This isn't a thing.
Think about all the logistics first.
Yeah, all the logistics. But like, you just have to try. And one of the things that really, really helped me when applying to all of these jobs, trying to figure out this next stage of my life, was detaching from the outcome, casting the widest net I could. I applied for so many different jobs, like writing jobs. I was also around the time of getting the job I currently have now, I was also a finalist to be a writer in New York. So like, you just have to detach from the outcome, take as many interviews as you can, like look at as many apartments as you can, just be insatiable, be like Cookie Monster with the options, right?
Because
options are good. And then detach from the outcome, go into it. What did you learn from that interview? What did you like? What did you not like? Just be so freaking wide open that you're just like this giant blue sky with no clouds, because that's what will get you where you want to go. Being scarce like that scarcity mindset of like, oh, this is not possible, that's not possible, thinking of every single bad thing or every other like problem is not going to get you where you need to be. You just have to be open and non-judgmental and just detach from the outcome and just get as many options as you can.
I love that advice. That's so much, so good. Oh my gosh. Okay. Megan, this has been fantastic. And as always, even before we pressed record, we're like, well, we could talk forever. Well, we could probably record a 2-hour podcast together.
We could for sure.
I don't doubt it at all. Where can our listeners go to find you and connect with you?
Yeah. So I am mostly on Instagram. So at dr.meggiemarie. And then there's always my podcast. It releases on Tuesdays. That's called The Power Within Her.
Oh my gosh. So good. Thank you so much, Megan. I'm hoping and I am sure that people will be super inspired and encouraged by your story.
Aw, thank you so much, Courtney. I love you so much. This was so much fun.
Love you.
Thank you so much for choosing to press play on another episode of the Chasing Courage podcast. I am seriously so thankful for you. If this episode or the topic that we talked about resonated with you or someone that you might know, please feel free to send it to them and or share it to your stories on social media. If you share, be sure to tag me at Courtney_Winzicki on Instagram so I can personally thank you for spreading this message of courage, mental health, and motherhood. I'll be back next week, same time, same place. I hope you have a great rest of your day.